Check, 1, 2. That's a little bit better. So, hopefully all of you have seen the problem that happens in most shops, and that is that we have multiple databases, right? So we might have a production database, and we might have several production databases, and we might have a QA department, and we might have some development boxes or laptops or whatever you want to call it. And one of the major problems in any shop where you have lots of people working on a common database is that you need to propagate changes from one database to another. And generally, that takes a couple pretty standard forms. You've got developers who are working on maybe creating new tables or adding new attributes, and their changes need to get off of their laptops and into QA, or UAT, or whatever you call it. And then QA might say, well, that's 90% good. And so they might go back and say to the developers, well, that'd be great if you just change this one thing. And so some of their changes need to get back to the developers. And then eventually they sign off on it, and they push that new schema in the form of a patch to production, right? It's a little more complicated than that, because we also have what we call hotfixes, where a production database, you make some changes on the fly, you add some indexes, you know, you change some things around. And so those need to get back to the developers, because chances are it's the developers who are running tests. Sorry to say, DBAs tend not to do that. So I can't tell you how many times I've asked for a new PG dump of production, you know, as I'm developing the application, get the new PG dump and it breaks all my tests because something changed that, you know, nobody bothered to tell us poor developers about. So that's a problem. What we're not talking about here is another problem, which is generally you want to be able to take snapshots of your data or at least push data, for example, from production to QA. QA always wants, you know, they want a complete copy of the database, of course, to do all their testing on. And then generally developers don't really care about that. They just want some manufactured test data. We're not really talking about that. So if we're not talking about the data changes, then basically we're talking about changes to the schema. And so the schema needs to make these propagations. And of course, managing those changes, moving those changes from one database to another, is kind of a hard problem. And it gets even harder when you start looking at exactly how many databases you're talking about. Because you might have who knows how many dozens of developers all working with their own databases, or maybe they're sharing one. And maybe QA is working on, you know, three different trains of development at once. And those all get pushed to, you know, I don't have it in this diagram, but maybe you have, you know, 24 master databases, depending on different applications you're running. So all these arrows here tend to get really nasty real quick. And there are some solutions that have been proposed for these. So let's look at solution number one. As a company grows, you tend to do something like this. You say, ah, well, we just don't want to make changes willy-nilly. We want to store the SQL somewhere. So let's get a PG dump of our master database, and we're going to store that in the file system as a .SQL file, right? And then you say, okay, that's our baseline, and from here on, every time we make a change to the database, we're going to store a patch file, and this is, you know, patch 1 or patch project XYZ or whatever it is. And then you start storing those as you build them in a folder. So you stick those in a folder. And the problem with that, as everybody's probably experienced by now, is that your folder starts to look like this. And as you have, you know, 60 developers all working on different projects, it starts to get really difficult to manage looking through. Even if you use some kind of folder hierarchy, you've got some really difficult problems managing all those, merging them all, finding out which ones go into which push to production, all that kind of stuff. So there are some pros to this approach. It's if you're used to working with, you know, databases, you're used to reading SQL, then it's easy to read the patch file and it's easy to read the master.sql file and say, okay, well, you know, at some point I'm going to know what my database does if I read the SQL correctly. And it's fairly easy to apply to production because you start with the master, and then every time you push a patch, you just pipe it into PSQL or whatever you do, you know, do your import. That's pretty easy. It's also pretty easy to apply to development because a developer can just start with the master and work their way through all the patches up to where they are today and say, okay, here's my development database. So you write a little shell script or something to do that, or something, hack something together in Perl or whatever to run those. So that's pretty easy. There's some big cons to this approach, though. It is hard to manage as it grows, as we kind of showed. You can start getting into thousands of files, and that's difficult. It's also difficult because every single one of those SQL files, all those patch files, are handwritten, generally. And the reason they're handwritten is because a developer will, you know, start making changes to the application. He'll just start hacking on the database. And he'll be making changes in PSQL or pgAdmin or whatever he's doing. And then when it's time to do a release, they'll kind of go back and say, oh, dang, what did I change now? And they'll go through and kind of hand-find those things and put them together into a patch file. Maybe they'll run it against their tests, you know. Maybe they're building it as they go, but still, it's an extra layer. Another big con is that there's rarely any downgrade scripts. Now, some object relational mappers of note lately have been helping with this, where, you know, they say, well, every time we're going to make an upgrade script, we're going to make an equivalent downgrade script. But in general, if you're hand-generating these patches, you're going to have a forward-only patch and not a reverse patch. And so if something goes wrong, even if you have a great staging system that's just like production, if something goes wrong, maybe you can't roll the staging server back like as easily as you want to. Yes, sir?
What do you do about non-reversible changes, like ones that lose data?
Don't. That's an excellent answer. Yeah. I mean, besides backups, I'm not familiar with a good answer to that.
Don't write things that operate that way. I mean, you don't ever have to debug things.
Yeah.
You can move them somewhere else, rename them, whatever.
Yep. Thanks. Good question.
Are you making a distinction between data changes versus schema changes?
Yes, we're only talking about schema changes.
Okay.
Right. Although some of those could be drop table.
Yeah.
So that implies a data change, but we're only talking about version controlling the schema at this point. So, the last con for this approach is that it is difficult to coordinate. And in the sense of coordination, I mean, you know, if you've got a single application and there's six releases planned for the next 6 months, well, you know, some guys might be changing the database in an incompatible way with the next release. And so different developers and eventually different QA teams need to have different versions of these patches applied. And that gets hard to manage, just coordinating all those. So, what happens at this point, in my experience, is some smart guy, usually an agile, you know, generic programmer, says, aha, this is a familiar solution. This is a version control problem. And so what we need to do is we need to look at this in new terminology. And we need to say, ah, well, the reason it's easy to apply to production is because it's easy to update a database from one version to another. And the reason it's easy to apply to development is, well, that's just checkout. So I need to take, you know, whatever's in my repository and check that out, and I've got, you know, exactly what I need to make my database. And they look at some of these other problems, and they say, well, the problem with this is that there's no way to diff two different versions of my database. You can use pgdiff or apgdiff or something like that, but built into the solution, there's nothing. And there's no way to revert. So, you know, we start looking at this in terms of version control terminology, and we see pretty clearly, ah, well, I can solve all this if I just introduce a version control system. So naturally, in these days, if you haven't bought into the distributed version control gospel yet, then you're going to use something like Subversion, because everybody knows CVS is dead, right? So Subversion... So is Subversion. Not in my opinion. So in Subversion, this smart developer will come along and say, ah, well, what we need to do is we need to take all of those master.sql and patch.sql files, and we need to version control the files themselves. And so they stick it all in a repository. And one way to do this is that, okay, well, we still have a master, and we still have a patch, but when we push the patch to production, we update the master file with the changes that we made, right? And so, you know, when you push to production, you've got something written in your script of what steps you go through that says, update this, do a new pg dump, and update master.sql. And then somebody has to remember to delete the patch file. because it's no longer needed because all of the changes are now present in your master.sql file, right? Right? I'm not saying these are good solutions. But this is better in some ways because, yes, it's still easy to develop against. You know, it's actually easier because you're down to two files now, maybe half a dozen, but not thousands. And there is better branching if you have, you can have multiple developers working on different patch files for their projects. And as those get merged into production, then those changes automatically propagate to the other projects, right? So there's a little bit better branching. But there's still a lot of big cons. Still no merge. Specifically by that, I mean there's no real way to handle conflicts between different projects. Another problem is that there are some cases, and Postgres isn't too bad about this, but there are some cases where the order of output in a PG dump between two different versions of a database, the objects will be in different order. And so if you can generally trust them to be the same so that you could, for example, dump version 1, do a PG dump of version 1.1, compare those with the diff tool, right? Generally, you can do that. There are some cases because of dependencies that those get out of order, and then it becomes much harder to read the diff and find out what changed. So that's a problem. You're still third handwriting these patches, generally, and kind of mining your own history of the changes that you made as a developer. And then fourth, we still haven't solved the problem of hotfixes getting pushed from production back to the developers, because you're still going to do this PG dump, and all of a sudden these changes are going to be in that the developers knew nothing about, right? And so their tests are going to break at the worst possible time, because you tend to do this cycle as you're pushing to QA in production, and so it's always crisis mode, and you know, there's a lot of things we haven't solved yet. So that's generally the solutions I'm familiar with, and I would love to hear about any other solutions you guys have come up with, but those are the ones I'm really familiar with. And there's a third one, which is, okay, let's stop dealing with, you know, free and open source software and let's go buy something that does this for us. And generally, in the Postgres world, there's really only one that I'm really familiar with that I think people generally use on a regular basis, and that's EMS. And EMS is a whole suite, and it's got, but one of the packages in here is a DB comparer. And what that allows you to do is do a diff between two different databases and synchronize one with the other. So it's not so much of a version control vocabulary as it is a synchronized vocabulary, right? So this is just, the DB comparer is just the schema. They also have another module called data comparer, which does the actual data sync. And if you're not in the Postgres world, you know, then maybe you're using something like SQL Server, and then there's some other products like Redgate or Visual Studio Team Server that do these things. And so the great thing about these is, of course, hey, they're slick. They got a neat GUI. I can visually see a diff, you know, all colored up pretty, push the sync button, and everything happens just like I want it to. And, of course, they are integrated. Like, they do have all these other modules. So not only can you do diff and sync, but you can do all other kinds of things and, excuse me, track changes and blame people and do all kinds of great things. They do have some cons, however, though. Generally, at least as a developer, I want to be able to automate these things. And these slick tools, because they have a great GUI, it's hard to automate mouse clicks sometimes. So some of these don't have really good command line scripting tools to, say, run this with my build bot every night or, you know, whatever you're doing. Another big con is that most of them don't have a history. So once you've pushed that big sync button and you've synchronized your production database with whatever staging database you had, the actual activity of making the change is lost forever. And so this is something that in the development world, we really want to be able to say, well, 6 months ago, I think we made a change to, you know, this table, but I can't remember who did it or why they did it. And if we only knew why, then we could go back and either accept their logic or critique it, right? But if you're using slick tools like this, generally there's not a big emphasis on saving why you did that. Yes, sir?
I'll just mention, solo is another item that
okay.
It's Java-based, commercial. It does have an automation
Good.
So it's our DBAs have been looking at it as a possible answer for this. So it's billed as being one of the GUI tools.
Okay, so DB Solo, Java based, and it has some automation to it. Sure. Which tool wouldn't? Yeah. Okay. And of course, pushing on here, the last one is, of course, they're not free. They can be hundreds or even thousands of dollars per developer for some of these tools. And that can start cutting into your budget, especially if you're a startup. So I want to propose Solution Awesome, which is post facto. I've been building this for a while, and the primary technique that PostFacto takes that none of these other tools seem to take is that instead of doing a manual synchronization process between one database and another, and if we do that, then we stick with all this nasty, you know, tangle of arrows. And so what we can do is by introducing a new database called a repository, then we share our changes from one database to another through the repository. And so the repository keeps all the branches, all the versions, all of that. Now, how many of you are familiar with at least some kind of version control tool like Subversion or CVS? Okay, how many of you currently or significantly have used Subversion? Okay, so this is going to be a lot easier. Because PostFacto is very much like Subversion in its approach. It is a centralized repository, and there's lots of ways of doing concurrency locking and that kind of thing. You could do lock and unlock kind of approaches, but what Subversion does and PostFacto does is it takes a copy and merge approach. So when we want to make a change, we check out a copy of the database, and then we make our change, and then we commit it back. That's the Subversion approach. That's the PostFacto approach. So just like Subversion has a checkout command, we do our command svn checkout, and we tell it, you know, what file system we want to check out. Our repository is going to fetch those SQL files for us and stick them in our file system and call that our working copy. And that's what we're going to edit and then shove back into the repository. Subversion's checkout creates a new directory tree. So when we were handling all those file systems, all those SQL files, all the patches, basically we're working with a file system. So Subversion's checkout creates a new directory tree. PostFacto's checkout creates a new database, not a set of files. So when you do PF checkout and you tell it, I'm working on the project called Santa, and I want to stick that last argument there that says master, that's the new database I want you to create for me. And so that's going to create it on your local host, and that's going to be your working copy. So rather than shipping a binary diff from the repository back to our file system, we're shipping a SQL file. So that was the real critical element of designing the system, was the realization that the SQL files that have our DDL, like alter table, you know, add column, alter view, whatever, we don't want to version control the files of those. The files instead are our diff format. And that's what we ship back and forth. So that when we do a checkout, we get a SQL file full of DDL that creates our database. It's got all the create table, it's got all the alter table. And then when we start doing upgrades, we're going to get another SQL file that's got the alter statements in it. So once you have that, you've done your checkout, then you work with it just like you would with Subversion. You make some changes to your working copy. So you're doing that with whatever tools you want. You know, if you're using PSQL a lot, pgAdmin. If you're doing it in code, you could be doing it with Rails. You could be doing it with Django. You know, whatever you're using, Hibernate, whatever. And you change your working copy from the base that you checked out, and it changes over time to have all these edits in it, and that's your working copy. Then you call another PostFacto command called commit. And what that does is commit reads through all of the objects in pgCatalog, and I mean all of the objects in pgCatalog, and sees what's different between your current database and what you checked out. And as it works its way through all that, it collates a file of DDL. It's just SQL, right? And then when you say commit, it ships that off to the repository and stores it in a table somewhere. Yes, sir?
And is it storing the delta, or is it storing the schema as whole?
It is storing the delta only. Yes. Yes, sir?
I assume you can actually just get it to show you the diff without committing?
Yes, you can. Yes, you can see the diff without committing. So, just to finish off the workflow here, once you've committed that SQL to the repository, then if someone else has checked out the database at version X and they do a post facto update, they're going to get exactly that same SQL that you committed to the database, and it is going to be applied to upgrade their working base to a new working copy.
How will you handle situations where they've made some changes, you're coming in and you're potentially blowing those away, or how do you handle those kind of changes in the update?
Generally,
this looks like it's just pulling, it's pulling one file, it's looking obviously at the individual object, but is it actually
right.
able to say, this object changed, so we're only going to apply this and not touch that?
It isn't really smart about that at the moment. I would like to have that feature. Basically, what it does right now is it will go ahead and make the changes until it, if it receives an error, if you try and drop a table that is no longer there, then you're going to get an error raised by Postgres that then propagates up through post facto. But there's nothing, it doesn't go through at that moment and try to see what could potentially be a conflict before it tries to apply that. I would like that, but I'm still, it's not quite that mature yet. Yes, sir. It's basically all or nothing right now. Yeah.
Begin, update all the tables as specified, commit. If that fails, then you have no update.
Then you have no update, yes. If that update fails for any reason, if you get halfway through and it fails, it's all in a transaction and it all rolls back so that you don't have a half-merged repository. So it's at least that safe. Can we save some of the questions for a little bit later? Let me get through these. I've got plenty of time. Okay. And I will explain next a little bit of how this works. So maybe it'll answer some of your questions. There is a repository database that you need to create, and that's just as simple as create DB repo, and PostFacto will take care of the rest. When it does take care of the rest, it'll make a table in that repo DB, and it's named r_ whatever the name of your project is. So I'm dealing with Santa and a table of his toys and so on. And this is what's in that table. You're just tracking the actual revision ID, which is the change set number. So this might be our initial, or this is our first change, right? So revision ID 1 would be the base SQL. And now this is our second change. Its parent is revision 1, so that we have some history. You can do branching and tagging, and what goes in that branch field is totally arbitrary strings. So you can do whatever kind of branching scheme you want to do. It tells you who made the check-in, it tells you when they did it, and it forces you to put in the commit message so that you describe the changes that you're committing. And then finally, it has two fields here, one for diff up, which is basically the diff between your working base and copy at the time you committed, and it has the opposite script to take it back from the new to the old. Okay, and it generated both of those when we typed in pf commit. That's kind of on the repository side, and the repository can be hosted somewhere else. It could be the other side of the world. But whoever's actually doing this development and working with PostFacto is going to have a local database of their own called PostFacto to store what they've actually checked out and how it's changed. So all this does is say the database that this checkout has been stuck into is called master. It's on localhost server. The server here is referring to the repository database. So this is saying that the repository is stored at localhost in a database named repo, and the project name is Santa, so it knows to go look at the R Santa table, and it tells us the branch and what revision we're on. So the next time that we do an update, we can say, we're at working revision 2, And the latest head is revision 7, so we need to pull all those changes. So that's kind of the internals of the actual storage. But now I want to tell you about how we get from one to the other. So basically what we do is we start with a working base here. So when we did our checkout, we had a toys table and it had an ID field. And then we made our edits so that we added a name column to that toys table. So if we were just going to commit that, what postfacto does is it collects the sets of all objects in both of these databases. And there's going to be, you know, hundreds of these, not just what you've changed, but everything, right? So it looks at tables, it looks at indexes, it looks at views, it looks at constraints, you know, goes on and on and on. Then once you've collected both of those sets, it simply walks through both of those sets and compares them and says, ah, well, most of these items are exactly the same, and there's an algorithm for making sure that they're unique and that they match up. And then in this case, we notice a change, that there's this new name attribute that wasn't there before, and there's nothing to link it to. So we mark the new attribute object, this new toys.name, and we say, well, that's altered. So all we're doing is looking for changes, and we're connecting these, and that's how we find the different changes. And if there's no connection, then we mark it as altered. Then step 3, because we have to spit out our SQL in an order that will actually run. You can't create an index on the table before you create the table, for example. We have to sort this topologically, which means in dependency order. Okay. So before we do that, we have to just calculate all those dependencies. That's kind of step 3. So we know that these columns depend on their parent table, for example. And then we do the sort. The sort is probably the most complicated part of this whole process. And fortunately for all of you, I've done this for you. So if you start hacking away on this, you know, there's going to be some changes with 8.4, et cetera. But this is the hard part, and it's already done. So this is where it gets really hairy, because we don't just have, for example, you know, a column on a table. That's fairly easy. But instead, we need to go through that whole PG underscore depends table in the system catalogs. And that's got everything. That's got which columns, you know, well, actually, it doesn't do columns. It does which, you know, how foreign keys interact. This is an example of that. You know, if we have a primary key and a foreign key, then we have all these different things involved just in that one linkage. Yes, sir?
Two things. One, it does have columns. There are object sub-IDs.
Yes, sub-IDs, yes. Right. But that's a separate step because they are sub-IDs.
Sure.
Yeah.
Does it go through PHSH depend, or do you just not even worry about the roles?
No. I would like to worry about them, but that's an extra layer. Roles and other per-cluster objects are a difficult problem because generally if you're upgrading, you know, if you have a single cluster with 10 databases, you may not want to drop a role that one of those other databases is using. So that's a trickier problem.
Okay.
The per-database objects is pretty straightforward, though.
Right.
But
okay. I'm just curious if you did it or not.
I think I do for roles. I would like to make that toggleable so you can just say, I don't want to do roles and things like that. But that's the way it works right now. Because some of those can be critical. You know, the flip side of that is that, you know,
if you don't do it, somebody else has to do it in some other way.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you're worried about, say, grant and revoke, you know, on your system tables, then you really want that to be in your under version control. But it's a thorny issue. So then after we do the sort, then we just, now that we've got a sorted list of objects on both sides and the differences between them, we step through that sorted tree, really, of objects and say, well, which one of these has changed? Oh, well, this toys.name is altered, so we're going to generate an alter table add column for our diff up, and for our diff down, we're going to generate alter table drop column, right? And then store those in the database. So that's about all the technical stuff I have to go over in the first blush here. There are a lot of open issues because this is by no means anywhere near, you know, version 5 or whatever we might like it to be. This is very much 1.0 alpha. But I did, you know, develop this on a pretty sizable database at Etsy and got not only the current database, you know, under version control, but went back through all of those patch files that we had stored and was able to merge all those in. So that was a lot of complicated things like adding new tables and changing views and changing functions, stuff like roles that changed over time. And so there's been a pretty sizable chunk. I'd say I'm about 80% of getting the really full coverage that I'd like. So there's normal stuff like that that people might want to add to this. Per cluster objects, like roles, is one of those things I'd like to work on. I would also maybe someday like to work on version controlling data, not just schemas. But that's a completely different issue that's got some very fundamentally different approaches to it. I would like to work on filtering out things. So if you are, for example, using Sloney in production, you don't want all that Sloney crap to be pushed down to your developers who aren't doing that, right? And generally, most of those tools can be, most of that could be pretty simple if you are good about putting those kinds of things in their own schema. And then we could just have an option on the command line to exclude certain schema or in some kind of a resource file. Exactly. You'd have to have your own, you'd have to have some kind of way of filtering those out by name.
Right.
Yeah. Right. That too. Yes, sir.
So in other words, the way it currently works is if you have a database and you want to put it in version control first time, it just commits everything.
In the first change set.
You can't select like you would with a process in version control. You should say add this commit.
Correct. Okay. Correct. However, the saving grace of that right now is that the diff that it creates is not some inscrutable binary format, but you can go into your repo database and hand edit that. So some of the things, not only that, I mean, that kind of is a backdoor way around to fix that problem. But the other thing it fixes is if you do have, for example, some lookup tables, like you know, a list of countries or something like that that has to be in every database, then you can go in and kind of hand stick that into your diffs for any given change. So those are kind of solvable. Yes, sir?
So there's no way to kind of just do like a particular schema?
No. And so I would very much like that. And I'm hoping somebody in this room jumps on the project and contributes that because this is very much an open source project. Yes?
Going back to your diff up and diff down, uh-huh. Because it looks like at least theoretically this would allow you to roll back schema changes.
Yes.
How do you handle, this was the issue that we were talking about before, about the question of data loss. In other words, you've added some new column, and then you populate it with data, and then you say, oh my God, this column breaks everything. You roll back, but you don't want to lose the data that was there. Do you handle that at all, or what do you do?
I can't think of a generic way to handle that. If somebody else can, I would love to integrate it. I have a feeling, and this is just a hunch, that would be somewhere along the lines of an NP hard problem. So I probably can't solve that in the general case. Yes?
Can you comment more on skip lists?
Yeah, I was about to get to that. So this is something that Subversion does, because if you're, say, for example, you checked out version 3, or I should say revision 3, you know, back in 2005, of some project, say you're working on, you know, I don't even know. Well, say you checked out revision, you know, 3 years ago, and now everybody's up at revision, you know, 2100, then that's a lot of changes in between. And what you do not want to do is take every single one of those changes and apply them in sequence. That can take a really long time. So what Subversion does is it introduces the concept of a skip list, so that rather than doing each one of those by hand, it will take a set of those, generally in an exponential order, and collapse them into a single change set. So that when you jump from version 5 to version 2100, you might take one jump to version 8, and then you make another jump to version, I don't even know, you know, something in the thousands, and then finally you do the last few changes, so that you can jump changes. Post facto doesn't have that right now, and in fact, it can get very slow as soon as you start getting into hundreds of change sets. It can get pretty slow checking out a whole new database because it's doing each one of those in sequence.
Is there a way to rebase easily?
What do you mean by rebase?
Well, I mean,
do kind of, I mean, kind of like you skip it, but at the time you indicate saying, okay, I don't care about changes older than X.
You like a new baseline.
That would not be difficult given the schema, the design of this. I don't have a command line tool for that right now, but
that's not one you have to do yet, though.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Basically, it would come down to tagging a new version of the database out of it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
If you could, I was just kind of curious if you've done it to see if there were any quirks.
Right. No, I haven't. But I would like to see that done.
Okay.
Sure.
So internally, it's stored as the original version and then a bunch of diffs and deltas between the original version and wherever you're trying to get to.
Correct.
So it's basically going back to the previous problem, but at one point it would be nice to be able to reduce and say, here's the full new set, so that if you wanted to check out that particular version, you don't have to. So I guess if you wanted to check out the new, the head revision from the trunk on something that's been maintained for a year. Currently, it sounds like it would go through the long process of applying them one at a time.
Correct. Yeah. Currently, if you want to do that checkout of head, then it's going to take a long time, granted that you have lots of change sets. Skip lists, or maybe some other of these approaches, would allow you to compact all of those so that you could just say, well, I'm going to start at version 10.24 and then go on from there. Yes?
Something that wasn't clear, maybe just wasn't mentioned, is you indicated in terms of what was stored, the version IDs, previous version IDs, was a reference in the schema to this object depends on that other object. Is that something that's there that you just left out of the slide?
You mean in the way that, for example, an index would depend on its table?
Right.
Right. That is not stored in the repo or in the diffs other than implicitly because, and I say implicitly because it is implicit in Postgres itself. So that, because Postgres manages those dependencies for you in a certain sense, as long as we spit out that diff in the correct order and put our create table before our create index, that's why we did that topological sort, then we're safe enough. But we're not storing that metadata, no.
Where do we store the indication of that ordering?
We don't. We don't store the...
No, are you asking where does Postgres store it, or where does he store it?
Where does he store it?
I don't store it, because it's implied in the order of the DDL in your diff.
He only stores just the raw diff.
Because storing the textual form of the diff.
Yes, and it's exactly what you would get if you did a PG dump of that limited group of objects.
Fair.
Yeah. Yes?
Just out of curiosity, when comparing, when you're actually doing the diff on a large PG catalog, what kind of time are you... I mean, how fast is it? Why wouldn't you... Just a crazy question, maybe a stupid one. Why wouldn't you just store the PG catalogs as you go along, and then you can do granular diff on any particular object and its dependencies? I'm just asking a very stupid question, maybe.
I'm not sure I follow what you're suggesting.
I think it's a question of so you decided that what you would actually store in your repository would be a textual form of diff.
Correct.
But that's actually the same base question I had is, did you look at, maybe storing that diff in something that was more machine understandable so that you could do comparisons and stuff like that? I mean, the text is great for a human, but presumably if you've gone to the trouble of figuring out how to generate that text, then you could always generate that text but store something internally that was... different.
Yes, I mean, there is the possibility that we could use some kind of intermediate representation because at some point we still have to make the changes. And generally, I'm not aware of a way to do that other than storing the actual textual representation and executing it.
So when you do the diff, do you actually build up the previous revision of the database?
Yes, yes. And in fact, when you do your checkout of a new, from a repository for the first time, you actually get two databases at that point.
Got it. Okay.
One is a working base, and then one is the working copy that you're actually modifying.
Oh, so it's kind of like Subversion where you can do the diff without having to connect back to the...
Absolutely, yes. Yes.
I mean,
this is kind of the, I don't know. Okay, the tools you're running are all like command line tools, right? And you're having to, yeah, I mean, that's right, right?
It would be nice to have a command line interface. I mean, there is a core library, and then the command line interface is just a kind of thin layer over that.
Sure. I was thinking about cross-database issues.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that I guess what you're basically doing is you're pulling everything into memory in your utility and doing everything there rather than using things like being able to write complex SQL to join your two different catalogs because you can't across databases unless you have something like DBI.
Correct.
I mean, that's just, have you thought about
that is,
that makes sense? Maybe having a third database that you load the other two catalogs into and then using, I don't know, I'm just wondering about it.
I mean, there is some small issue to pulling them all into memory. However, it is designed as much as possible in kind of a stream format so that you don't keep as much in memory. You're not pulling the whole database into memory. Mm-hmm. You know, you're looking at the differences between tables and then creating a model of that. No, and so that's pretty small.
You walk through it
and then store what you have and throw away the rest.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
That allows you to avoid this, and it's actually a fairly easy hook to add in.
So the idea of manually specifying I want to store the whole thing at point X, that I think is useful, but I think it could be even better if it were automatic. So that regardless of, you know, because what always happens is, you know, you're gonna tag your release branch, and then you're gonna say I want to store that. And then you're actually going to put it in production. You're going to find these 10 different things, one every day, that you need to change. And you're going to be storing that full thing for every one of those. So I think the automatic approach has proven itself in Subversion. And I'd like to try that first. So, but if it fails, then we'll go back to manual. Yes?
My biggest complaint about the manual migration stuff is that to make a change, say a single line change to a function,
mm-hmm. The new function, yeah.
Do you have a solution for that?
Yes, and the solution at that point would be, number one, when you make your new function and you check that in, then apply it to your new database. Yes, it does replace it wholesale.
Right.
But because at that point, what I'd really like to get to the point of doing, and I think the tools are there and I just haven't built the front end for it yet, is it's really not difficult at that point to take those two, just the functions themselves, not the whole dump, and do a line-by-line diff with that. That's very easy to do.
Yeah, I mean, that would be useful.
Yeah.
The way that we handle that issue, I think, is maybe what the reference is talking about is, I mean, we have all of our functions in going back to SQL files, but a separate file per function.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then you just modify that.
Right.
You know, I mean, but then you're not, you can see the line, those line by line changes.
Right, yeah.
In something like Subversion, I just find that works reasonably well.
That works reasonably well, yeah.
Another benefit to this approach is that because the tool is generating the diff, I mean, it's generating the new create function statement,
yeah,
and the old one, then they're going to be exactly the same order,
right,
and they're going to be formatted exactly the same way.
Yeah.
So it's not down to a human getting the word wrapping right between versions.
I mean, I think storing each one in different files, what I would advocate, and I even wrote a blog entry about
yeah.
Two weeks ago.
I've done that.
Check them out. Modify date, so you know what to apply. Because you have to know what to apply, what's been changed.
Yeah,
the last
knowing what to apply is another.
Yeah.
I'm just talking about maintaining the function.
Oh, yeah, that part's easy. It's the same
forward.
As my curl file.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's one of the, so at CacheNet, we've been dealing with this problem for a while, and right now we've gone down the approach of a bunch of cache files, but then on top of that, we periodically take, here's a dump of, here's a schema dump plus critical data out of production, that also gets checked in. We bring some tools that, wrap all this kind of stuff. And the big fallacy that, the big problem that we've run into is that you don't want to do everything as a diff. One of the real challenges with databases is like indexes and tables in particular, those are diff operations.
Right.
But functions, views, rules, triggers, almost everything else you actually want for real code.
Right? Yeah.
And I think the real challenge is coming up with a system that actually handles both of those.
Right.
So, I mean, this works great for, like, the diff side, but I'm not... And one of the problems that you end up with is, like, with views, we don't store the actual formatting of the original, you know, view itself.
Right.
So the best that the tool can do is what pgdump does, which is just guess at formatting. And pgdump doesn't do a very good job of it.
Views are not a single line of pgdump. It's almost useless.
And actually, they are on a single line from pgdump, but there is a hook in the API to get a formatted one, and my tool uses that.
Oh, good.
So it is wrapped.
But even the formatted one, because the formatted one, if you do like a backslash D, that's what you get.
Right.
And for complex views, it's certainly not.
I've seen some of those. Yeah.
So
it sounds like it's
really. Yeah. Can we pull back in? This guy's been very patient. Go ahead and ask a question.
I think this is sort of peripherally related, but I don't know if you have thoughts on how to capture some of the changes that a diff might not represent. Now, maybe like a column rename is a bad example, because I don't know enough about the underlying metadata to know whether you can detect that. But things like that where, you know, as opposed to a drop and an add.
Yes, a column rename is the bane of my existence right now. because there is no way,
okay,
if you're looking at a changed database, to know if it was a column rename or if it was a drop and add. I would love to look into that solution.
If you drop a column, it'll still exist.
Is that stable across databases when you compare one database to another?
If you've done drops and adds in the same...
If you run the same set of operations.
Yes.
Okay.
Then yes, it should be.
Great.
But is it order dependent?
Patch is welcome.
if two people were working in parallel, so had a different set of patches to get to the same database, will the row ID still work the same way or no?
If you did the same operation,
the same
in
order to, okay.
It's order dependent.
So, like, if you're working on something and you made a database change, I made a database change, and then your
that
stuff gets
is,
merged in,
yes,
I don't have
common.
The same order, so it's not going to work. It's not going to work, right?
Don't do that.
All right.
Shame on you.
Yeah, sorry.
What would not work is if he drops a column and you drop a column, and then you try to merge each other.
Right.
Yes.
So you need to do the changes in the same order he does them.
That's what I want the tool to do for.
But it would have to be within the same table, level, right? Like,
well,
if you're doing your own table.
Yeah. I mean, obviously,
I think two drops would actually work. I think
the drop.
I think you actually would have to work a little bit to try and construct.
Well,
you know, change case. That
yeah,
play.
Drops would probably work. Drop in an adding column. Like, that's the problem, right? If
a drop and a rename.
Mixed drop, rename, and add all in something.
But there's already talk about doing, you know, having voids for columns and separating out, you know, or, the whole logical view versus physical view of table structures.
Yeah. And there are. One of the things I really like about this. About this particular tool is it's Postgres, and 98% of what you need is in those system tables. There is a 2% that isn't there. You know, there are some dependencies that aren't in pgdepend that affect the sort order and those kinds of things. But, you know, generally, I would love to have this kind of feedback maybe and say, well, let's maybe get some of those hooks into Postgres to make the product better.
Hackathon.
Yeah.
Well, the thing to note about this rename issue is actually all the existing version control and not ultimately solve that.
Correct.
To the extent that, you know, sort of the latest git is you just completely gave up on it.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of figured out later that it wasn't renamed by the name of the file.
Right.
It's not resolved easily.
Right. But we do have more metadata in the database approach.
What?
Unless you actually store that you did a rename.
Yeah,
which
no,
maybe
this
we
is
should
not,
do.
No,
it's
all the problem.
The way to do that in Postgres and the system catalog goes back to separating the logical view and the physical view and having a, you know, three basically identifiers for a column. You know, one that never changes, a logical placement, and then a physical placement. You know, that's something that we've been talking about for a while.
Yeah. And there's a lot of reasons that we want that.
Yeah, that helps a lot of things, not just him.
That one.
Yes.
How tied in is your diff mechanism? Because just the code that you have that will diff two databases seems hugely valuable.
Yeah.
I mean, the differ itself is pretty isolated from the rest of the package, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say it's pretty reusable. I mean, the one thing that might get you is right now when you create the differ itself, which is the actual engine that does the work, it does a lot of work right when you call a constructor. And maybe you don't want to do that. But for my purposes, you do want to do that. So.
Would it be difficult to expand it so that it could output something other than just here's the SQL statements that represent the diff? Because you might want to actually have a report of, oh, here's the columns that were added in these tables, here's things that were dropped, here's...
Sure.
I was thinking of putting it in a database.
That would not be difficult. That would not be difficult.
Yeah, it is kind of like a diff stat. The concept.
Diff stat?
It'd be useful for
reporting. Have you ever seen diff stat? You should use diff stat.
I have a Google request.
Yes, sir.
I looked at your website last week and just now this little thing. So I didn't find any documentation. Is there?
There isn't any yet. There's no documentation yet.
It's right there.
Read the
code. Yeah. Yeah, I just wanted to show you that sometimes you can't just do the alter table output. Sometimes you have to do crazy tricks like this because we don't know if we just renamed or dropped or whatever. So sometimes we don't output a single line of SQL. We output that and make a temp table to make sure that we're saving data and not destroying databases and things like that. So there are some weird corners like that. But documentation, I so meant to write that this week. But it's tricky. I wrote the talk instead. Yes.
Implementation.
You mean how did the code work? It's all Python. Yeah. Yep. That I'm a Python hacker.
Which PG driver do you use?
This uses PyPG SQL because it was inherited. I'm not sure that for this particular application, I'm not doing any tricks. It's just execute statements and get back the result. Actually, rarely even get back the result. So it's pretty bare bones.
Some discussion about, you know, if there should be like a recommendation or something about which one. There's three of them, I believe, right now.
I'm familiar with PsychoPG and PyPG SQL. I'm not sure of another one. Well, other than the version of my own ORM, which actually skips all that and goes right to libpq. But... did somebody have a question over here?
Oh, yeah, I did.
Yeah. You're over here.
I guess the major thing about this is putting this into production, you've got to make sure that your chain sets break out the way that your developers want to push them out. In other words, you've got the classic problem that two different developers are working. Well, I guess because each one of them checks out their own working copy of the database, that's how you get isolation.
Correct.
How do you
handle the conflicts?
Yeah.
Again, I would like to make that better by kind of pre-checking for some of those conflicts. But right now, it's just when you say, okay, well,
because if two developers check out at the same time,
yeah. So if developer A makes revision, you know, 6, and developer B makes revision 7, and they're incompatible at the time of commit, you're going to get an error.
Okay.
Before you actually push that into the repository,
okay, good.
So you get early failure, at least. Yeah. Any other questions? Okay, well, just a reminder, I should have had that up. But if you want to go check it out, and I would really love today to kind of inspire you, and maybe some of you will jump on there and say, this is 98% of what I need, here's the extra 2%, commit, you know, be a contributor. So just come talk to me, and we'll get you set up. Thanks.
All right. Who's going to open the speaker? Nice.
Thank you. Can't wait for yours. Surprised my voice held out.
My voice is a little sketchy right now.
Anyone?
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess you're getting all this.
Sorry?